I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The award-winning novelist, humorist, and travel writer Will Ferguson joins me again. He's got a new novel out, 419. It is described as a novel both epic in its sweep and intimate in its portrayal of human endurance. We'll ask Mr. Ferguson, who joins me from here in Vancouver, what 419 means. My understanding is that it has something to do with those scam emails one gets, usually from someone in a land far away needing help getting money from a bank belonging to a dead relative. It's an insidious phenomenon, and we'll get Mr. Ferguson to tell us about the book and more. Apparently, a Canadian woman, Laura Curtis, goes overseas to investigate her father's death, which happened because of one of these swindles. Will Ferguson is the author of several prize-winning memoirs, including Beyond Belfast, Hitching Rides with Buddha, and Canadian Pie. His novels include Happiness and Spanish Fly, which he was on with last. He has won 3 Leacock medals and has been nominated for the IMPAC Dublin Award and a Commonwealth Writers Prize. The website for more is at willferguson.ca. The book is published by Viking. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Will Ferguson. Mr. Ferguson, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Yourself?
Great.
So
I have a proposition for you.
Sure.
I have $35 million
okay.
that I desperately need to get out of the country because of a corrupt government is going to take my money. And I want to deposit it into your bank account, Joseph.
Yeah.
And I'll give you 10%.
Sounds,
does that sound good?
It sounds like
are
you're
up
good.
For it?
Sure. I get those emails every day, though.
Exactly. And it's kind of the principle behind spam.
Yeah.
Is that if you send out, like I never, ever click on spam. And I don't know anyone who does. But somebody must be, because they send out so many. It's the assumption that if you send out a million messages, you don't need a million responses. You just need one
right.
to make it worthwhile. And 419 email cons operate on that principle. They kind of bomb the internet. They do kind of mass mailings. But if you make the mistake of clicking on it, even to say, oh, you've got the wrong guy, or I'm not interested, or, you know, leave me alone, suddenly you're going to get a very personal message. And what's frightening, especially nowadays, with the access to personal information that the internet allows, I could very easily draw up a profile of you, Joseph, very easily. And I can respond as though I know you or I know someone who knows you through your Facebook friends or through your hobbies. I can say, I'm also a bird watcher. I saw your presentation in Florida on the red-breasted woodpecker, and it's nice to finally contact you. So what happens is they instantly turn it into a very personal correspondence, which makes it harder and harder for people to keep their guard up over. So that's the key is never to click, never to respond, which is what 99.9% of people do.
And what is the 419? What does that refer to?
419 refers to the section of the Nigerian criminal code that deals with fraud, and more specifically, advance fee fraud. That's the correct name for 419 con. And the basic idea is you're promising someone something big, very, very valuable, for a small amount of money up front. Because the human brain, the psychology behind it, is you, of course, balance out the cost versus the reward. A classic example is people who are notified to tell them they've won a Lamborghini.
Mm-hmm.
And a $200,000 car. You're thinking, wow, all you have to do, though, of course, is pay the taxes on it, which is a couple thousand. Now, normally, if I just ask you to give me a couple thousand dollars, you'll tell me to bug off.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is people think, wow, I can have a Lamborghini for just a couple thousand dollars. And unfortunately, there is no Lamborghini.
And is there a way for people, like, I mean, I was just looking at my email the last day or so. I got one from Joe Biden, and I got one from Gaddafi's widow, or from people purporting to be these people. Is there any way say, like the vice president, or there was one time from Ban Ki-moon, the head of the United Nations, to go after...
You got an email from Joe Biden?
I did, yeah.
Wow, man, you're connected.
So is there any way for those sorts of people to go back and say, you know, you're impersonating me, and isn't that a crime?
Oh, it is, but they may be located in the Ukraine, they may be located in Russia. You don't know where they are. That's the problem, of course, is the persecution. And to be honest, police have their own priorities. And
yeah.
I know with the Nigerian internet, the Nigerian police are not overly concerned with how they see it. is protecting us from our own greed. That's how they see it. So they're not. So there's very little recourse. And the internet is anonymous, so it's very, very hard. And you've kind of touched on that. The essence of this is that it's anonymous. You know, the internet is so hard to prosecute. It's so hard to track someone down. So I had this idea for a story,
yeah.
And it is a story. It's about a woman who manages to track down one of these 419ers, the fellow that she thinks is responsible for killing her father. So I thought, what if you could actually find the person? What if you could track him down? And she decides to fly to Nigeria to confront, to corner this person. Now, you should never, never do that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stress that. If anyone you know has taken money or has been scammed by these people, you do not fly to Lagos, Nigeria, and find the people responsible. So it is a work of fiction. But it is based on case studies. And the internet, the email exchanges that you see in that novel are all real examples of 419 emails from case studies. I just basically cut and pasted real emails. I'm assuming that these con artists aren't going to prosecute me for plagiarism. This is what I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm assuming that they're not going to come out of the shadows long enough. But yeah, the whole email exchange between her and her father are all cut and pasted from real exchanges, real case studies. And these cons devastate people. There was a financial planner in Saskatoon not too long ago who embezzled $109,000, a financial planner, remember, who embezzled $109,000 from his company's pension plan, thinking he would get millions, didn't, and he ended up killing himself. And there was another fellow in England who set himself on fire after he'd been conned. So they really do devastate people. The average loss in a 419 con is $200,000. Can you imagine?
Wow.
$200,000. And people embezzle. They often target seniors, retirees. They often target people in churches, connected to a church, because they often have access to the church's rainy day fund, and they tend to be more trusting. So it's a very dark and insidious game that's being played.
Yeah. So you mentioned the lead character in the book is Laura Curtis. The story is she from Calgary?
Yes, she's in Calgary. No, the city's never named. It's just this kind of oil city by the mountains that's very cold and full of glass buildings and sandstone. So it's Calgary. I never name it. I wanted Calgary to be kind of surreal, and I wanted Africa to seem much more real. But yes, she's based in Calgary, the character.
And her dad, I guess, is taken by one of these swindles, right?
Yeah, he dies. The book begins with his death, and the police soon realize something's wrong. And then they start, they confiscate, the investigation confiscates or takes possession of, I should say, his hard drive. And they even though he's erased his hard drive, they're able to pull out all these emails, and they slowly realize what happened. And it's based on interviews and conversations I had with people in the police, with fraud investigators, traffic investigators, and so it's as real and as authentic as I can make it. Her father is actually almost fits the classic profile of a 419 victim. He's a retired school teacher. He's not very tech savvy. He's sitting on savings. He's a little bit lonely, a little restless, a little gullible. But overall, he's not a multimillionaire. He's just an average retired man. And that's really the classic profile of a victim.
So what's Laura like?
Laura is the catalyst to the story. She's originally I had this idea that because you want the character to have a really big character arc. If I had made her an FBI agent or someone who worked for the CIA, it wouldn't have been impressive that she would go to Nigeria. So originally I had this idea: what if she was agoraphobic, one of these people who are afraid of crowds and never leaves her? But that was too much of a stretch. So instead, I thought, what would be sadder is if she was agoraphobic by accident. She lives online, she works online, her whole life is kind of alienated from other people. She never leaves her building often. She goes weeks because her apartment is attached to a shopping mall which has everything she needs. She never has to actually go outside or really deal with people face to face. So that's the character, the main character, and she's so devastated by the death of her father that it forces her out of her comfort zone, out of her shell. And it ends up with her dealing with the Nigerian mafia, and trying to outsmart them. It's a very tense story.
Yeah. Did you have to go to Africa yourself?
I desperately wanted to go to Nigeria. My wife vetoed it. The book takes place largely in the Niger Delta, which is actually off limits to outsiders. You can't go in there now unless you work for the oil company or have armed guards. So I couldn't go to the Delta, but I was going to go to the northern part of Nigeria, the Sahel, which is where the Sahara kind of ends. Mm-hmm. And that's where one of the main characters is a woman, a mysterious woman from the desert, from the Sahel. And the week I was planning my trip, everything was coming together. I was going to fly into Kano City in northern Nigeria. Religious violence erupted, the worst religious violence in about 40 years. Christians massacred Muslims, Muslims massacred Christians. There were riots, there were kidnappings. So my wife looked at me and said, no, it's a work of fiction, it's imagination, you're not an investigative journalist. So I did not go, sadly.
Yeah, you thank a lot of cops in the book. These are police officers in Calgary. They helped you a lot in the writing of this book?
Immensely, immensely so. Actually, they helped me with the plot, not just the details, but they solved some plot points because I don't know anything about police investigations. I often, when I write, I rely on the expertise of others. Even the African section, I had a lot of readers who are Nigerian citizens or married to Nigerians or living in Nigeria, so I got a lot of good feedback. Likewise with the police, I don't know how you investigate a traffic accident. And two officers in the Calgary Traffic Response Unit took me out to Ogden Road and they walked me through it, what an accident would look like, what they would look for, and even how they would realize something was wrong. They gave me some clues, some tips that they would look for, and how the wheels break and how they turn. So in some ways, they actually helped me write my story, the police investigation part.
Now, Confidence Tricksters, that was a theme in the last novel of yours, Spanish Fly. Is there something that fascinates you about the sort of element of our society, the sort of criminal element? I mean,
it does. Don't you kind of, at some level, admire fast-talking con men who can... Like, I like the old classic con men.
Right.
You know, my father was suspiciously well-informed about con artists. He grew up in the Dust Bowl of the prairies in 1930s. I had an older father. And he knew a lot about con artists, and the stories were so fascinating. And I loved the old school, golden age con men who would sweep into a town, fast talk the rubes, and move on. Unfortunately, there's another story to be told, and that's the victim side. Uh-huh. So in a way, 419 is now telling the other side of the story. As much as I admire the sweeping audacity of con men, you have to admit there are victims, there's fallout, and there's people who are devastated by these cons. So with 419, I kind of turned my gaze towards that.
So when you write about con men and sort of this criminal activity, I mean, you're pretty steeped in it. You know a great deal about it. You know, I'm not going to ask if you're, you know, if you do this on the side, you know, masquerading as a novelist, but... Do you find in your writing that it's your chance to do something bad?
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because with Spanish Fly, and I think we talked about Spanish. Was it Spanish Fly I talked to you with?
Yeah,
with
correct. Last
time?
Yeah.
With Spanish Fly. And I may be repeating a story that I've told you already, but when I did Spanish Fly, my publisher said, why don't we set up a table and you can do three-card Monty on the street? We'll film it. And I said, well, two things. One, it's illegal. Two, if I knew how to do three-card Monty, I would be doing three-card Monty for a living. I wouldn't be writing books. So I, although I know about it, it doesn't mean I can necessarily do it. So unfortunately, knowing a subject doesn't mean that you have the talent or the ability. And I don't have the key ingredient, which is confidence. I don't have that unshakable confidence that con artists thrive on.
You mentioned that we shouldn't click these emails that we get and engage the writer of these emails. Have you been tempted, though, in the course of writing this book to do just that? Just to, not to give money to them, but just to talk to them for a bit?
Oh, I'm very tempted, especially because I could justify it easily as research.
Yeah.
But I knew enough not to. Now, there are websites where people do answer them and bait them. It's called scam baiting.
Yeah.
There's a website called 419 Eaters, like EATERS, and there's I think another one, called Scamarama, I think. But what people go online and they answer these emails and they make outlandish claims and they drag it out and they turn it into kind of a joke. But it's a very dangerous game because you'll see if you go to those websites how quickly the threat of violence comes out. Like, they're dealing with dangerous people. Mm-hmm. But, of course, they're banking on the fact that they're anonymous as well. But I really, I don't recommend scam baiting either. It's certainly fun to read. It's funny. So often they're very, very funny. They'll respond, you know, to a scam artist saying, "This is Captain Kirk here with the Enterprise," you know, making them, kind of stringing them along. One of them wanted answered as F. Flintstone, a bedrock, yeah. And wanted to pay in clams, like real clams. And there's all kinds of very funny interactions where people answer these emails and bait them or have fun with them. Again, I don't recommend that. It's still very dangerous, even with the anonymous nature of the Internet.
You wrote a book about Katimovic?
Yes, I was a Katimovic participant, with Katimovic, which has just been canceled again.
Yeah.
That's the second time it's been canceled. Usually when the conservatives get in, they cancel it, and when the liberals get in, they bring it back. Now, I guess it will be the NDP who would bring it back. I was a participant. It was a cross-Canada volunteer corps. We were paid $1 a day and all the granola that we could eat. It was a very kind of politically correct hug-a-tree type of program. It was very fun, though. It was my first experience really traveling across Canada. I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
Just in light of the news of last week that they're canceling it, and I noticed it
well,
in your bio.
Well, it was coming. As soon as when the Conservatives got a majority, we knew the writing was on the wall. It's frustrating because I think it was an ideologically driven decision. I don't mind. I actually tend to be very fiscally conservative. I don't mind trimming fat and cutting this. I don't mind if you really are trimming fat and not cutting into the bone or the meat. And Katimovic actually generated more income than it cost, you know, when they did studies about the spin-off of these volunteer corps. So it was kind of inevitable. So it wasn't a shock. It wasn't a surprise. Brian Mulroney canceled it as well, and then it was brought back. So I think the problem is the name, Katimovic. It means, it's an Inuit word, a First Nations word meaning meeting place or gathering. And that's very Tai Chi kind of left-wing kind of image. I think they should rebrand themselves as the Investment Volunteer Corps of Canada. Then the Conservatives would fund it. Or call it the Grassroots Investment Volunteer Corps of Canada.
Yeah.
Then you'll get funding. I think that's the key.
And I mentioned it in the introduction that you've won three of these Leacock medals for humor writing.
Yes.
Is that something that one wears around their neck, or how does that work?
No, unfortunately, there's no ribbon. You can't wear them. There is an actual medal.
Yeah.
There is a ceremony. They give you an actual medal. But I wanted them to put ribbons. That way I could, like, mark spits, you know, just wear, walk around with them on all day. Like, bling. It's the closest thing an author gets to bling.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they give it to you in a very dignified velvet box, and you can't really attach it to a ribbon.
And you've won more of these than any other writer, have you?
No, tied. There's been a couple of authors who've won three. So I'm tied. So I've got to get that fourth Leacock somehow.
But this book, unfortunately, is not a funny book. So
No. This I blew it with this one. This one is not a humor. It's more. So any chance of a Leacock medal went down the tubes with this one.
Yeah. Now, do you find that you like alternating between, say, fiction and travel writing?
Yes, actually, I do. That's kind of my intention. That's roughly how I do it. As the last book was a travel book. And then I try to alternate, if possible. You can't always do it. For example, this is fiction, and my next book is travel, an African travel book. So I do try to alternate. I really believe it uses different parts of your brain, like fiction and travel. So I try to alternate.
Yeah, and so the book on Africa, when does that come out?
Well, I haven't completed the trip yet. I'm going back. I'm going to Rwanda in June. So the book won't be out until probably early 2014.
Yeah. Well, we'll await that, but until then, we'll read this. I can't wait to read this book this weekend, Will. You really sold me on it, and I'm looking forward to it. You're a pretty good writer, so
thanks.
Congratulations on the book. Continued good luck with it.
Thanks, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoyed the ending. I have to warn you though, if you're looking for a happy ending, you may be disappointed.
Well, it's a story, I guess. So, yeah.
Yep.
WillFerguson.ca is a website. The book is called 419. It's published by Viking. Its author, Will Ferguson, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.